Ash, how you doing?
I'm all good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, listen, we've been waiting for this for a few weeks. We have got our last director on today, the lovely Philip Franks, joining us on our little silly podcast.
Really nice to have somebody we both know onto the chat.
That's true, because so far it's just been me parading out all my old pals, but now we've actually got someone we both know. And not only that, he's a fantastic director, a fantastic actor, and he's just lovely to chat to, isn't he? Because we used to have a lovely time in rehearsals with him, and now we haven't seen him for 3 months, so it's nice to see him again now. Hopefully everyone else will like him.
Bet your bottom dollar the first thing he's going to say to you is, how big is your beard? You look like Santa.
Yeah, that's true. That has been a running theme for the last few weeks, hasn't it?
It has.
I'll edit that out. Pip Franks, you're very, very welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us.
Well, time is what we have.
Abundance.
In so much time in abundance, it's true. Hence why we do this soppy little podcast. How have you been? Because full disclosure then, we should say that you were the last director we ever worked with, young Tash and I.
Yes, I mean, I was practically the last person to be directing when the locks locked down, in that we filmed the dress rehearsal of The Habit of Art, and then as we finished, so the theatre shut its door in Eastbourne. So and luckily got the Croft filmed the day before. We were in there as the great big prison gates clanged shut.
Yes, and that was a very... So I was fortunate enough to get along to that filming, which was the final dress rehearsal for Abbott.
Yes, and anybody who watches it, you are the laughing audience. Thank you very much.
Yes, no, it's true. But I did think at the time, well, as did we all, of course, what a surreal experience. You know, Tash and I, we just finished the night before and we'd filmed The Croft, which was the show that we did with your good self. And then I thought, well, at least we've had a few weeks of run, but that poor company, Habit of Art, they had done all that work.
Absolutely.
Film it. Thank you very much. Goodbye. That must have been a very odd kind of conversation with everyone post that recording, I'm guessing.
Yes, it was very, very, very weird. It was partly kind of a little bit giggly, a little bit hysterical, but it was also sad. It was sad, and people were quite justifiably worried, and I think they know the worry's been completely borne out. I mean, and it was, you know, it wasn't just this country. It was going to go to America, so we would have, I think, be just about to finish our run in America around about now. Please God, it'll happen again next year in the same slot.
Sure. Because it was a cracking show, and you could just tell that. I know you've done it before, and I'd not seen it before, but I thought it was a cracking show, and I was thrilled to actually be there to give some sort of moral support as an audience to a company that were never going to perform that.
No, they were feeling like the ice was cracking under their feet. So to do to do something with admittedly a small group of people, but people who travelled to see it, and you really needn't have done it. You could have gone home, and I was very, very, very grateful. And they gave it their best. You know, they gave it because they had somebody to play to. They weren't just barking into an empty room.
Yes, that's true. That's true. That's absolutely right. So now, look, Tash and I both know you as a director, of course, but there will be a lot of people that will know you as an actor. And one of the only kind of real questions I had for you was, are you a director who acts or an actor who directs, or do you sit very comfortably swapping both those hats?
I think I'm a bit of a hat swapper. I came to directing much, much later. I think any actor reaches a time probably when they think, I really ought to be taking a bit more responsibility for my life than sitting around, you know, having a bit of a moan in the green room and wondering what's for tea. And this came to a head. I was doing a production. I won't say what it was, but it was unhappy, and the actors were unhappy, and the director wasn't helping, and I was doing what actors do, sitting around moaning in the green room. And the artistic director of that theatre did me a great favour. He gave me a real bollocking. Said, you do not want to be one of those people who sit around sniping and moaning, because it will only make you smaller. If you think that you could do better, then do better. And I went, but I don't know how, I'm not a director, blah, blah, blah. And he put his money where his mouth was and said, I'll give you a production and I'll be there to, you know, hold you if you fall. But that's what I'll do. And you'll be able to see and get it out of your system. So that's what I did. And he gave me one really good bit of advice, which was, don't do a play just because you love it. Do a play which doesn't have very many relationships in it, because relationships are what's hard. I mean, in art as in life. And so instead of doing, you know, Chekhov, who I love, but it's a great big multiple spider's web high rise, you know, whatever you can think of in complicated terms, computer set board of relationships, I did Dr. Faustus, which basically has one relationship, which is a man and the devil. Bunch of tricks. So I threw everything I've learned from every horror film I've ever watched at it. Mark, you'll be familiar with some of these tropes. But it's only got the one bit of sort of complex psychology. And I had an absolute ball. Thought I'd got it out of my system. Hadn't. So right. That was that.
Right. That's great. That's great. And I think that's so interesting, isn't it? Because it is very easy, I suspect, for actors to kind of go grumble, grumble, moan, grumble, but to actually step up to the plate. Because directing is one of those, I would never direct. I just don't understand the psychology of why anyone would want to kind of say, hey, I've got this idea, follow me. Follow me in this direction. It's a exposing
like
place.
War.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Come on, chaps. Over the top. I'm leading by example. I'm right behind you. I suppose when I started, I thought maybe it was one thing. And then when I actually did it, I found out it was something completely different. It's what it absolutely isn't, is about telling people what to do. It really isn't that. It's not about controlling people. It's not about pushing people about. It's not about saying, do it like I do it, and then it'll be good. It's about getting in a room with people and seeing if you can make them confident enough to be imaginatively free, and then celebrating what they do, and then editing it. Now, obviously, there's loads of choices that you make too, I knew nothing about what it was like to work with a designer or a lighting designer. I didn't even know what a production manager did.
That could still be true even today of most of us, I have to say.
Actually, that is still true today, Mark. So, you know, next time, perhaps you'd like to explain yourself a little bit better. But,
yes, a little bit, but I'll try. Yes.
all those imponderables, all those, you know, like a composer, a designer, I was absolutely blessed in the team that I happened upon on my first job. So yes, I had Stephen Brimson Lewis, where is he now, designing. He was a fledgling designer. I had Jeremy Sams wrote some music for me. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And I took it completely for granted. I didn't know that I could have had a difficult time with any of them. And I absolutely didn't. And, you know, to be fair, since then, you know, 40-odd productions later, I get on very well with the other members of the team, I hope. It's very, very rare that I've had fallouts with anybody. And I've learned, the more I do, that the more to trust to other people's skills, really. I mean, Adrian, for instance, Adrian Linford, who is my designer of choice. I've done loads and loads with him. We've now reached a point where we can just have one conversation and he'll generally come up with something really, really interesting without me micromanaging.
That must be a joyful experience from a creative's perspective, because when you get to that point of that kind of shorthand, you know, comfort of work, of understanding that you're not going to be let down and you're always being supported. I mean, that's really collaboration at its sharp point, isn't it? That's when it really is working. And it's smooth and running easily.
I think there certainly were when I started, but I think there are very few directors left who think that that people work best if they're frightened. And that couldn't be further from what I think. I think people work at their absolute best when they're laughing.
Yes.
Really. You know, even
and
in
feel supported, I'm sure, because I've definitely seen it where directors aren't supportive insofar as you're vulnerable in the rehearsal room. There's a lot of things that get spoken about and people feel like they can open up and you want to be able to at least be there and support rather than how dare you make this comment or how could you? Mm. How could you speak like that? Or how could you have that opinion? You can't have that.
But it used to be that way once upon a time, though, didn't it, Pip? I mean, you know, I can remember authoritarian dictatorship directors, and it was a miserable experience.
Not for us, but for the
acting company, always a miserable experience. I mean, we can go away into a company office and moan and grumble about it, but I think for actors, it's a really blocking kind of way of working.
It is, because you come in the morning, slightly clenched and slightly frightened, so you give slightly less than you would if you knew that anything you do or say is okay in the rehearsal room. You know, I mean, by which I do not mean coming in and spewing forth hideous white supremacist racism. That's not okay. Don't get me wrong.
That's not
okay. but you know, I think I might try this and look a prat. is fine. You know, that's absolutely fine. But the one I learned from most was Trevor Nunn, who, when I finally got to work with him, having kind of worshipped him from afar, it didn't disappoint. We know however much of a politician he may be outside of the room, and you have to be to get to where he's got to, inside the room, you feel that you trust him with anything and that he notices everything you do. And that was such a wonderful feeling. You know, he'd have a rehearsal room full of people improvising, like 30 people improvising away for 3 hours. And then he'd be able to sit down and for 45 minutes tell you exactly what you'd done. You know, over there, that was happening. And over there, this was happening. And I think that might be really useful. And he would never say X did it badly. He would just say, that was interesting. And why did you choose that? And I thought, this is great. This is so great, you know. So, if you learn from the best, I guess.
Sure. What's your take, Pip, given that you are a hat swapper and that you can duck between acting and directing? You know, I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, I hat swap. I swap between production managing and stage managing, and sometimes people get very kind of, that's odd, but it isn't. Your directing Kung Fu is presumably informed by your experience as being an actor and vice versa, I guess. And is that, when you roll all that together, there's a lot of directors that do both, actually, but I find I'm working often with directors who have been career directors, and I always worry and wonder whether they're missing a trick, to put it politely, maybe.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would agree with, or am I barking up a kind of really lame tree?
No, I mean, I very much want to agree with you, because it's what I do. I think necessary to have been an actor to be a brilliant director. The two best directors I've worked with, Trevor Nunn and Roger Michel, were never actors. I mean, or if they were, they were actors to a kind of university level. But they have the empathy. They have the instinctive empathy. They know how an actor's brain works. I mean, what I can bring is knowing when I feel ill at ease.
So there will be possibly, I have no idea how many people listen to this bit of nonsense Tash and I do every week, but there'll be possibly some people that will know you from your TV career. Certainly Tash won't know this at all, in terms of what I remember. Darling Buds of May was a huge big TV phenomenon that you were all over once upon a time.
Tash, way, way, way in the past, when horses roamed the streets, and the theatres were lit by gas jets.
I think I'm younger than I am. My dad listens. My dad loves that show. He's 80. He loves that show.
Yeah, I don't think you're younger than you are at all.
That's, no, you've just proved a point there.
You've just completely proved everything. There are core groups of people who recognise me, and most of them drive taxis.
Yes.
How funny.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. Also, quite a lot of taxi drivers come from Kent, and the series was largely set in Kent. So, I'm a memory jog in various ways.
You must presumably get that. You know, we know each other, don't we? Or haven't we worked together before? You get a lot of that, presumably. Yeah.
You do. You dig a lot. Very seldom you get what I'm sure most people are thinking, which is, oh my God, what happened to you?
Or that actor friend of mine who's been around for a while, he said that his favourite one that he ever got was, "Didn't you used to be ..."
Yeah.
Okay.
Whatever happened to him?
Yeah.
I did have a terrible one from somebody who really ought to know better, who is an actor who I'd worked with many times and I hadn't seen for ages, and I bumped into in the foyer of a theatre, and he looked blankly at me as I went, "Hello, X, you know, how are you?" And he looked blankly. I said, it's Philip Franks. And he went, "Oh, my God, well, we all get older."
That is brutal.
That is brutal.
I think the round's on him, isn't it? The drinks round was on them at that point.
Well, yeah, you buy me a Complan and I'll eat it. I'll have it in a beaker with a plastic top.
Oh, that's awful. That's awful. But of course, apart from, you know, everyone, well, those of us of a vintage that remember that series will remember that, and Heartbeat as well, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was very big. Yeah, that was.
I'm just doing all the. I'm finally doing some work now in lockdown. I'm doing all the audiobooks of the novels that Heartbeat was based on. So it's very much in my mind at the moment.
That's so interesting. I was going to ask you about that because we delayed this a couple of days because I know you were recording audiobooks because I know that's a big strand for you as well, isn't it? In terms of
I did loads and thank God for them because you know they're fun to do and B you can do them in a sort of a foam lined cupboard so social distancing is no problem at all.
How quickly do these audiobooks get turned around then? Like, will we see these weekly?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, it depends on the company. If it's a big company like Audible, they turn around very, very quickly. I mean, they'd be out probably within a couple of weeks, but they need to be edited and fine-tuned and whatever. But generally, the turnaround is pretty quick. Yeah.
And are you doing those from home, Pip, or do you get jetted off in a limo to the BBC or something exciting like that?
Yes, there's a team of silver clad dwarves who come and take me in a litter every morning. Lucky me. This one is in a studio which is literally 5-10 minutes walk away from my house. You can record from home. A lot of people are, but it's a big, big old financial outlay. And if to do it to really top professional standards, and if you're doing that, you need to be absolutely sure that it's going to pay for itself, because otherwise you're buying a very expensive toy.
Yes. And it's interesting that we had Flick and John on, and Flick was doing a lot of recording from home, but she has always done that. And I suspect there's probably a lot of actors at the moment who are going through that calculation of, is it worth me making that investment? Because this, you know, in order to earn and generate income with one of the skills that I have at my disposal, and because there's so little other work around, it does seem that there's a lot of people trying now to get into a lot more voiceover work.
Voiceover work is super common. I see a lot of things on social media platforms, certainly for graduates or whatever it may be, because it's easily accessible, isn't it? The digital side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but unfortunately, there are as we never cease to be reminded, so many, many, many more actors than there are jobs, and now with the job pool having shrunk to the size of a pinhead, that they are now actors are practically eating each other in the street in order to record some bit of tripe.
Hunger Games-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, Hunger Games-esque, absolutely. Some jingle exactly. For double glazing.
Exactly, the voiceover games.
Oh, no.
So now, look, I wanted to ask you, given that you've done so many productions and we had a joyful time working with you on the last one, and it was just lovely, and it went very smoothly, and we had a nice company, it was a good show, and brilliant production company. Shout out to Original Theatre Company because they were excellent. You know, we love working.
Don't miss
with them.
Don't miss their latest the live stream
that
bird
came out
song.
Last night, didn't it?
Yeah, it's had fantastic reviews.
I did a little bit of work on it, just a little bit. I had a very small contribution. But I suspect by the time this podcast goes out, it will have been and gone, sadly, because it's a very...
I'm sure it'll be trackable down somewhere. I haven't watched it yet, but apparently it's great.
Yeah, it is. It's really, really super. It went from what should have been a Zoom table reading into a full-blown movie experience. Fair play, they did a really good job on it, you know. But what I was going to say was, given that you've done as many shows as you have, there must have been, without wanting to name names, there must have been some hellish, nightmarish productions that you have worked on that you'll, no matter how much you try to drink yourself unconscious, will just stick in the memory forever. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, that would be absolutely fair to say. Yes. Can I get away without naming names? I'm not sure I can. Okay, I'll beep in if I name names. The worst thing I've ever directed is heartbreakingly pretty well my favourite play. Extremely starry cast, many of whom loathed each other, one of whom, now dead alas, his agent had neglected to tell us that he was quite far down the Alzheimer's route, really couldn't remember anything. Somebody who brought a dog into rehearsals, because there is a dog in the show, but the dog was completely uncontrollable, which led to the massive volcanic Jurassic Park style temper loss of the leading lady. That really was the show that had everything. It had tears, it had bullying, it had somebody who suddenly thought they'd been diagnosed with a life-threatening disease. I mean, it had somebody in the wings, the same actor, in fact, taking all his clothes off in the wings when and the stage manager rushing up to him and saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" "Oh, it's my costume change." You don't have a costume change as this poor old man was naked in the wings. And in the middle of it, me flailing around saying, thinking to myself, "I've got nothing. I've got nothing."
That's kind of the reason that prompts the question, because I am constantly staggered that directors can put themselves in that position where it's you can come in with your A game and your best show in it ready to do, and you have to at some point trust everybody else's. It's totally useless. And I just think that must be the most vulnerable place to be. I just can't imagine.
Yeah, no, it was really horrible. I was, I cried a lot. I was sick a lot. I didn't sleep very much. I mean, it was just absolutely horrible. It's the downside of taking responsibility for your life and your work. You know, there are massive upsides as well, you know, which are basically the same thing. You know, as an actor, you don't always have a lot of responsibility. You are often told what to do. There is often a lot of sitting around. With a director, there is no sitting around that isn't filled with concentration and work. There are massive upsides to it. A good rehearsal day, it sends you just walking home on air, you know. As does a good response. When we did Nicholas Nickleby at Chichester, which is the probably, you know, the happiest thing I've done, being in the vomitorium and watching the last bit on the first night and thinking, please stand up, please stand up, please stand up. Not to the cast, to the audience. And then they do. You think, well, this is it. You know, it doesn't get any better than this. It turned out it did, because when we went to Canada with it, I had to step in and be in it. And I was in it on the press night there. So it was like stepping into my own dream. There I suddenly was, dressed in Victorian clothes, looking out at a thing that I'd always looked in on over 2 years, because we toured it as well as doing it twice in Chichester and in the West End. Then we went to Toronto. And then finally, the last ever press night we did before the Toronto run, I was actually in. Thank God, it could not have gone better. And there was this experience that I knew that I'd seen happen from behind people's heads, from the audience standing up and crying and, you know, beaming. Mm-hmm. And there I suddenly was watching it. And that was where the two jobs, the two jobs coincided in a brilliant way. You know, thank goodness. The cast were completely brutal. They were they lined the wings with their mobile phones, taking photographs of me as I was trying to act. You know, they gave no quarter.
Always play to the wings. There's the harshest critics.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, panic in the wings.
I was going to ask that you've been working in drama schools. You do a lot at RADA, and that must be a completely different gear change in some ways. And I'm sort of assuming I imagine you really enjoy it. Having worked with you, I imagine it must be something you find great satisfaction in doing.
Yeah, I do. I love it. Again, I didn't know what I was going to, how I was going to take to it. But I had an actor friend who became a full-time teacher, and he got me into RADA to direct a play. I've not really taught. I have just directed shows. Although, of course, the teaching element is huge. So I'm not really a theorist. You know, I don't really understand about actioning and Stanislavski and all that kind of thing. But what I do really enjoy is making a show with people who are really anxious to try everything, rather than you don't get it often, but occasionally you will get an actor who you can tell doesn't really like to stretch. It's rare, it's very rare. But with the kids at drama school, they are desperate. You know, they're like prancing ponies. You know, they're desperate to try out anything and be better and be, you know, fling themselves at it time and time again, which is great. Also, the other thing is that you get to do huge plays with huge casts that would be financially catastrophic if you did them anywhere else. So I've done, you know, Webster and Middleton and Howard Barker and Etheridge and all those things that outside of the National or the RSC, I probably wouldn't get a chance to do. And that's great. That's fantastic for me. So I get a lot of learning out of it as well. I'm not quite sure how that's going to pan out when all this is over, because I think everything we're going through at the moment, but both in terms of the pandemic and in terms of political change, it is going to mean that particularly the student world is going to be very, very different, I think, when the clouds pass.
In what way? How do you think that will manifest itself?
I think it will manifest itself by there being considerably less job opportunities for people like me, for instance. But also maybe on the choice of repertoire. I think there may be, I'm pretty sure the pendulum will swing much more towards a more modern and more diverse choice of plays, maybe towards more storytelling, towards more improvised, towards more verbatim work. I'm not sure that the focus on the classics, which has been the sort of backbone of a lot of drama school training, is going to be as prevalent as it used to be. I don't know, but I that would be my instinct.
Interesting. I do a little bit of work in drama schools and do production supervising, and I think the thing I am mulling quite a lot is I have a small nagging devil on my shoulder worrying me about the ethical dilemma of training people for an industry that looks pretty bleak. It always has looked a little bit bleak sometimes, but just at the moment feels a little bit bleak. And what that response in training will be in order to give people a thorough education and be some kind of hope that there is an industry to go into that's worthwhile going into.
Yeah. I mean, I guess on the other hand, it's very, very hard to dissuade somebody from becoming an actor, as I know, because every fibre in my parents' body went to try and persuade me not to do it. So I think most people, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it anyway. So you may as well be trained in a way that will make you understand and be able to be strong enough to ride out the industry in all its hideousness as well as its joyfulness.
Yes, true that. And so now, given that we haven't been in performances for a while, how are you keeping creative body and soul together in these strange times in which we're living?
Drawing a great deal. Huh. I've done. This is going to sound about as niche as it gets, but I have, for instance, done a series of the complete 37 plays of Shakespeare. And so I've written them in haiku form, the Japanese verse form, which goes 575 in syllables, as you know, and I've illustrated each one. And I've done an enormous amount of political cartooning as well. As a lot of serious and kind of straightforward watercolors, whatever. I've done a piece. It's up on social media of the history of the Rocky Horror Show, for instance, in about 8 pages worth of cartoons. I paint and draw. I always say I don't have enough time to do it, and now I've called my own bluff. So I've basically been drawing every day.
That makes gardening and bread baking seem a bit sad, doesn't it?
But it does seem a bit bleak, doesn't it?
Yeah. Bread, yes, certainly. Gardening, no. But certainly bread and vegetable soups.
Those drawings and cartoons, are you monetizing those? To use that horrible word, are you uploading them and making money?
I'd love to. I have no idea how to.
Please explore Etsy, because that tends to be a local business route of, and if you were to put them up, I'm sure there'd be plenty of people. I would certainly buy one. Well, plenty of people that would buy prints.
I think other people have suggested that as well, Tash. That's a very, very good idea. I'll send you some, 100%. Mark, when we've finished talking. I'll send you some by email. So you can decide whether they're just crudely drawn stick people or whether it does have some sort of future.
Oh, I appreciate that. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
I've just managed to find them on social media because I'm very quick
and
nimble like that. And they are truly beautiful.
Thank you.
The colouring on this.
What have you found? You found the Rocky Horror stuff?
I've managed to find... So Rocky Horror Show has managed to give you a retweet and they've said, so here's Philip's Rocky Horror lockdown sketchbook. We think it's astounding. What do you think? And I don't know if you'll be able to see through my camera.
Oh yeah, that's them. Yes, I can.
Bit blurry, but I'll pass them on to you.
ping me the link, and you know, I'd like to say very professionally, yeah, we'll add that to the show notes, because you know that sounds like professional. That's what podcasters say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, we'll happily add those.
I also do I do dog portraits too, so I've done a lot of them.
Tash is sold.
Please could you do my dog? Please could you do a picture of my dog?
Yes, certainly I can.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sold.
If you send me a picture of your dog, I will do him or her.
Her.
Of course I will.
She's a bit dark. You might not be able to see her outline. She's tiny.
She looks like an octopus.
She looks like E.T. most of the time, bless her.
Tash, what you didn't pick up on with Pip's Rocky Horror Show sketch diaries there is, of course, that Pip was in and has been in quite recently Rocky Horror Show as the narrator.
I have. Ooh. I've done loads and loads and loads. I've done well over a year's worth of it and had an absolute ball. So, no, it's not just plucked at random out of the sky. It's the best fun you can have with most of your clothes on.
I was going to say, here's a terrifying image for us, because that means you end up, don't you, in stockings and suspenders and a basque at the end in the wheelchair.
Oh, yes.
These are the...
I'm you sound like so. The church advert.
Oh, yes. Who says there aren't perks to this job?
Oh, yes. Quite the sight of me in fishnets. It doesn't get much perkier than that.
Well, that's just fantastic. I think I might have seen you in that role if it was the production that came to Brighton a few years back.
Yes, I did. I've done it in Brighton. In fact, the very, very first... the first time I ever did it. So the first time I walked out to be shouted at by the audience was in Brighton.
Was that was the 40th anniversary production,
yeah.
Right? Yes,
yeah, that's
I
right.
I did see that. Yes, it was very good. And it was very fine production as well.
Great. Chris Hoskin, listen, very good.
Very good. Very good indeed. I think we have more than taken up enough of your time. I know we have time to spare in lockdown times, but it's really lovely for us to actually to just spend the time with
don't
you.
Go, and, don't go! Don't go!
Human interaction.
Well, that's how we're doing human interaction now, isn't it? We're all zooming away. But thank you so much for taking the time. It's been really, really kind of you.
Right, it's been an absolute treat.
Oh, well, bless you. We're getting a very eclectic mix of people to come on, but to get our last director of our last show together...
Potentially ever. The way it's going.
Was who?
You!
Was you!
Me.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Pip. All right.
Brilliant. Lovely to speak to you both.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.